So you can invest, let's say, $100,000 into a venture capital fund like a Square Peg or an Airtree, and you won't pay capital gains on your gains in that investment. Now, that's obviously partially it's the funds lobbying, the funds and the superannuation funds lobbying government to say, we don't want to pay tax on this. But the reason is because we get to invest in these early stage startups, and that will create jobs for the economy. And it's a good, you can see how that makes sense in government to approve something like that. Whereas something like crypto, there's been no deep dive into what investing in the crypto space does. You pay tax on your capital gains.
That is Byron Goldberg, and this is episode 43 of the Blockchain Pro podcast. Hello and welcome to episode 43 of the Blockchain Pro podcast. I'm Adriana Balotti, and our guest today is Byron Goldberg. You know that saying about luck being the culmination of preparation and opportunity? Lots of crypto journeys are a little like that, and Byron's story is another wonderful example. Are you ready? Let's go. No, wait. Before we get into it, I want to let you know that I've done my best to improve on the sound quality of this episode. Problem is, with online interviews, especially when everyone is working from home and suffering from low bandwidth, it's really hard to get a crystal clear sound sometimes. I've made some improvements, and hopefully in future episodes we won't have this problem. But for today, I apologize to your ears in advance and hope you get through it. Now, let's go.
Hi, Byron.
Hi, AD.
How's it going?
Yeah, all well, thank you. All well. How about you?
Yeah, pretty good. I'm enduring.
Thank you for having me on the show.
Thank you so much. Let's dive right in and go back in time about what you were doing before you started not only working in crypto, but before you discovered crypto. How did that look like?
Okay, so let's go back a couple of years. I was working at EY as an accountant.
All right.
Not too proud of it, but that's what I used to do. And I can't remember how I got introduced to crypto or to the world of crypto exactly, but I had a couple of friends at EY, and we discussed it, and it just carried on growing and growing. And they used to speak about blockchain at EY, but they didn't explain it properly. We didn't have any idea what they were talking about. So we did our own research, and we got immersed into this world in about 2016. There were three or four of us. And we then started investing a little bit, obviously just our own money. We started reading white papers, obviously Bitcoin. So some people have a big story about how they learned about Bitcoin. And I don't have such an impressive story about that. It was more learning about Bitcoin and cryptocurrency and the ICOs as well. Learning about the technology, the Bitcoin technology. I think I listened to a Nick Szabo podcast. It may have been on a Tim Ferriss podcast with Nick Szabo about Bitcoin. And I do remember him talking about how the blockchain becomes like a spider web, and the spider starts in the middle, and each time it goes out and goes out, it gets stronger and stronger, and it gets harder to go back and retrace. So we then started to do this, and people started getting interested in it. And I think we started a WhatsApp group, and then WhatsApp became too small. So we moved over to Telegram, and people just used to ask us questions. So then we started hosting these little meetups, and people started saying, okay, well, how about you just invest for us instead of us doing it ourselves? Because you have to buy Bitcoin on Luna, and then you have to send it somewhere else to buy Ethereum, and then you have to take Ethereum and get into an ICO or whatever. So the four of us set up this little fund which we didn't charge any money for it. We just really, it was more of an educational thing. And at one stage, we had over 100 fund members, and we'd have weekly meetings, and we sent out monthly statements, and we tried to create a portfolio that was had a bit of the blue chip cryptos. We didn't invest in ICOs for the guys, but we invested in a couple of smaller staking projects and things like that. That was pretty much my intro into crypto. That was, we did that on the side and on the weekends while I was at EY. And then just before, we obviously started seeing traction, and just before we, I'd done the research into actually turning it into a business and turning it into a real fund, like an unlisted fund, and the market crashed. And at that stage, it was like early 2018. And the thought was, okay, well, crap, nobody's going to give us more money now. And especially if we are going to sell our own crypto now, because we think that it's going to continue to go down, we don't think now is the best time to start a fund. So we just managed what we had. We just continued to send out statements and do a bit of research and things like that. And obviously, some people wanted to withdraw their money, so we had to go through the withdrawal process. So it was very admin intensive, but a very great intro into crypto and a bit of fund management. And
lots of lessons learned, especially at that time, right? For the ups and downs.
Exactly.
Were you living in South Africa at the time, or...?
Yeah, so I was living in Johannesburg at the time.
Okay.
And then a couple of years later, that was that. My contract at EY ended. I did a bit of a stint with them in New York. And then I moved over to Australia a couple of years ago. In between New York and Australia, I traveled for about 3 months. On that trip, I was in a taxi in like Guatemala somewhere. And we were driving through the mountains, and I thought, okay, I'm quite a nervous flyer. Not horrendously nervous, but I'm also, if we're in a dodgy little bus in Guatemala going through the mountains and the bus driver's taking corners way too fast, I need something to just to take my mind off the car ride. So I thought, okay, what job would I absolutely love and would I be good at? And I thought, you know what, Luna, I've enjoyed using their business in Australia. I mean, in South Africa, I used to use the app. That's how I got the crypto. So I went onto the website. I saw they were hiring for a role in the UK. And I thought, okay, I don't want to go to the UK, but how about I send a letter to the CEO, and I send them my CV, and I tell them the plan in this letter. And the plan is, I'm going to Australia. Your app is in Australia, and we're turning into this global business. How about I take Luna to Australia, I set you guys up, and I launch the business. And that's how I am where I am today, I guess. Yeah, that's pretty much the story. They came back a couple of weeks later and they said, look, we're not looking into Australia just yet, but we'll let you know if the time comes. And then I think a meeting must have happened a couple of weeks later. And I got an email back saying, fantastic. Okay. They spoke about Australia in this meeting. I then said, hey, there's this guy that wants to do this. He's a South African, he knows all about the business. And then lo and behold, a couple months later, I started with Luna. Here I am.
Great timing.
Yeah.
I mean, isn't it amazing? Like sometimes you just put something out in the universe and it comes back to you.
Absolutely. And the old saying that you miss 100% of the shots that you don't take. And the truth is, and I speak about this to everybody, it's you live once, and if you don't go out there and try, then you don't have that chance of success, right? So you really just have to go out there and give it a shot and see what happens. You've got more of a chance doing that than you do if you just keep quiet.
Sometimes it's just a matter of asking the question, like, okay, this is not what you want, but how about this? This is what I can do. And then sometimes things just, you know, come together in a way that you would never know about if you hadn't asked the question in the first place.
Absolutely. And that's just like a conversation, right? If you don't ask a question in a conversation, or if you just sit there and let the other person talk and talk and talk, and you don't respond back, the conversation isn't going to flow, and life flows, right? So You have to give, you have to add, try make it interesting.
Exactly. So you go to Australia, brand fresh off a plane with the mandate of implementing or launching Luno in the market. And I'm sure that has been quite interesting. I remember more or less when I started seeing Luno signage all over the city and people started to sending me text messages saying, hey, Bitcoin, Bitcoin, Bitcoin. And I'm like, yeah, guys, Bitcoin. So tell me a little bit more about how crazy it must have been to, you know, just digging into the market.
Okay, so there was obviously a lot of work that happened before that. There was a lot of work on the product side, getting the product ready, making sure people could deposit on the store. And bank accounts are also quite hard to source in Australia if you are anything to do with crypto. I started around October and we launched the next year in August. So it took nearly a year to get off the ground and make sure our I's were dotted and T's were crossed. And then that was the exciting part, right? So it was exciting to build and to work with the engineers and teams to build up the platform. And then just like that, the app went live overnight. And I was very fortunate, or Luno was fortunate, that we launched in August. And I think it was around middle of September that DCG actually acquired Luno. So I'm not sure if you know who DCG are. And most people would have heard of Grayscale or the GBTC Trust, Coindesk and Genesis. Maybe not Genesis, but Genesis and Foundry, who are the USA miners. So DCG is actually the holding company of that portfolio of companies.
Okay.
So they're all independently run, but they're all 100% owned by DCG. So in about September last year, DCG acquired Luno, and Luno became part of that family. And that essentially, Luno was a startup or a scaler. I'm not sure if you've spoken to many startup founders, but half your job is to just make sure that the business has enough money for the next day of operations. So the business went from having to search for capital during COVID. We really looked at like how to cut costs just on small things. Like you'll have subscription, let's say for example, Slack charges a subscription per user. And obviously we didn't cut Slack, but there's subscriptions like that, that we saw, okay, maybe we don't need that. Maybe. So we went from that mentality to, okay, DCG now owns Luno and they're a great company to work with. They're a very strong company. It's run by Barry Silberts, who is like up there in the crypto world of thought leaders. And them being a big company obviously changed the game for Luno, because it allowed the company to stop focusing on searching for capital and making sure that, and it was, okay, here's some budget, and we want people to now know about Luno, and we want to shout out about Luno. So that's the advertising that you're speaking about, came off the back of that acquisition. That actually was done up relatively quickly internally, but sourcing the media and trying to make sure that the message fit, that sort of stuff took a couple of weeks. And that was that. We then went to market with that campaign and it worked out extremely well. Everybody knows about the, if you see Bitcoin on a bus, it's time to buy adverts. And I think we got our wrists slapped a little in the UK for it, but they were fantastic adverts. People got pictures sent to them and tweets. It was a very fun time. And what was amazing was, that was at the beginning of the bull run last year. When we launched that ad, I think Bitcoin was at $10,000. And then we launched the second set of ads and Bitcoin was at like 20 or 30,000. And it was right at the beginning. So if you just listened to us,
you would have done really well.
pretty much.
And did you see a big growth in the Australian market with that campaign? And, you know, how is it going for you guys here? Because you have some pretty heavy, you know, local competitors.
So the one thing about the local competitors is they're brilliant and they're all run by really nice people. And what's been nice is, I guess, even the best thing about Australia is, you know, sometimes you can feel like a foreigner in a different country. Like you can go to Italy and you can pick, okay, these guys don't even want to speak English to me, right? And you go to Australia and all these exchanges and all these businesses, you think that they're going to just shun you for not being from Australia. Even though I've been a resident or permanent resident since I was 2 years old. I think when I was three, I was in a pram and I threw my milk bottle or my juice bottle over the Sydney Opera House into the ocean. Yeah. Just chucked it over as a little baby. But anyway, so I was saying that the competitors are fantastic and they're all very friendly and they're from everywhere. You've got people from Ireland and you've got people from Eastern Europe and it's just a very multicultural sort of space, which is fantastic. But going back to the campaign, obviously things started to kick off. We started with zero customers and we had some organic growth and some people finding that, like for example, America accounts for 6% of our website traffic, even though we don't operate in America at the moment. And that's just organic. We've got good content on the website. So organically, we were getting maybe 100 new signups a month, even though they couldn't use the platform. And then the marketing campaign really took Luno to the next level. It took us from zero to one. It's been growing, obviously, during that period we grew extremely fast. And now things have slowed off a bit as the market's pretty much slowed down. But yeah, that campaign did work pretty well for us. And it certainly won't be the last campaign.
Of course not. There'll be many other bull runs to ride on to the future.
Exactly.
All right. So what has been some of the challenges for you since starting working in the space?
Oh, so the first challenge, obviously, that comes to mind is banking. And I don't think it's a crypto-only thing. It's a fintech in general issue that we face. Banking is difficult. Lots of people say, oh, just when you submit your documents, make sure that your documents are fit and proper and they're what the banks want to see. And it's, the response is always, okay, but we can't even get to the stage of submitting our documents. It's just like, oh, you crypto, we don't want anything to do with you. So bank accounts has been hard. There's multiple reasons and theories as to why banks don't want to bank crypto companies. Maybe it's competition. Maybe it's the risk. The regulation side of things hasn't been a struggle because Australia's taken a laid-back approach. But I guess for businesses wanting to do different things and wanting to offer leverage products and things like that, regulation becomes a bit of a gray space where if you want to do something, you don't want to get retrospectively slapped on the wrist or even worse, get big fines or whatever. So it's not a massive hurdle. And I think the government at least now come to party with the Senate Issues Inquiry, or the Senate Select Committee, and ASIC with their, I can't remember, 343 Exchange Traded Products consultation. So that side will start to pick up, which is fantastic. And that will help the industry a lot. It will also, the goal of Australia is to attract talent. It's to keep businesses inside of Australia. COVID and the way they've handled COVID is a double-edged sword because it's not letting new people in and it's making some people want to leave. And let's say a country like Italy, for example, it's like one-tenth the size. I'm not 100%. So Australia is a continent and Italy is a country. And Italy has 60-something million people. So Australia's got 25 or 26 million people. Australia needs people. It's a big continent. It's got food. It's got animals. It's got all of that. It just needs to retain this intellectual talent for the future. So hopefully a good regulatory regime can help Australia prosper into the future. And Australia has taken a very wait-and-see approach on a lot of the regulatory things and with COVID and with just in general. It's not a risk-seeking country. Unfortunately, I think there is a stage that you need to start making decisions, whether that decision is to say, like for example, this is something I use and it's not a Luno opinion, it's really my own opinion, but for wealthy individuals who have over $100,000 or whatever the limit is, you can invest in something called an EVSCLP. Early Stage Venture Capital Limited Partnership. So you can invest let's say $100,000 into a venture capital fund, like a Square Peg or an Airtree, and you won't pay capital gains on your gains in that investment. Now, that's obviously partially it's the funds lobbying, the funds and the superannuation funds lobbying government to say, we don't want to pay tax on this. But the reason is because we get to invest in these early stage startups, and that will create jobs for the economy. And it's a good, you can see how that makes sense in government to approve something like that. Whereas something like crypto, there's been no deep dive into what investing in the crypto space does. You pay tax on your capital gains. Now, this is just a thought. This is just like a mind experiment. If you invest in something like Ethereum in the early stages, and that Ethereum turns into a multi-trillion dollar asset class that supports the world's ecosystem, why should you not be able to get some sort of tax benefits on that? Because you've helped to bootstrap that network. You staked your tokens to make sure that that network was secure, which has created all these jobs as well, and it's created an industry. So when I talk about the regulation space, it's not that it's a problem. It's just if the government as a whole really embraced it a lot more, I do think that the space could grow a lot quicker, and we could see people say, hey, we don't want to be in Singapore. It's way too hot. You're sweating the whole day. Let's move over to Australia where it's hot during the day, but it's cold in the evening. And let's move our headquarters there. Let's bring talent. Let's kickstart this ecosystem. I think that is the power of regulation or legislation. It can really make a difference between where you want to have operations or as a startup specifically, or as a DAO, or as a DeFi product. And yeah, so again, back to your question, not really a challenge, but it is something that can be improved on to really get the ecosystem going at a lot faster of a pace.
Let's say if regular people are having capital gains with their crypto investments and the government wants to give people government incentives. So instead of charging people capital gains for their playing with crypto, they should just be grateful that people have capital gains so they don't depend on the government to live their lives.
So back into that, and this I'm very passionate about. I think the government in Australia absolutely messed up with the way they implemented JobKeeper and JobSeeker. And I personally know people, and I think everybody knows people, that saw it as free money. There were no real controls over it. If there's a very small government that says to 26 million people, hey, you can go out and just claim free money, but you've got to give us a couple of documents. Some people were earning a certain amount of money per month, but JobSeeker paid higher than what their normal salary was. And those people are saying, well, screw that. I'm just going to sit at home. I'm going to collect these payments. I was only working part-time as a secretary 2 days a week, and the rest of the days I was at home and tending to my family or whatever. And those people earned a decent amount of money, and that money just came from the government, right? And the problem is the government is a business. The tax is the revenue department. That's why in America it's called the Internal Revenue Services, or the IRS. And it's the revenue stream of the business that is the government, right? Apart from obviously the central bank that just can print money, and that also is just revenue, but there's the expenses, which is just sending out money for free and giving people money for JobSeeker and JobKeeper. You've got this huge expense, but as a business, you need to make sure you're making a profit. So all of a sudden, the tax will go up, and it's taxing the generations into the future. And that's an argument we've heard a lot about. But when it comes to crypto or capital gains tax, on principle, I'm not even sure. And I study tax at university, and albeit South African tax, it's all common law nations. And once you've earned your salary and you've earned your income, you've already paid tax on that money. So I don't know if I 100% subscribe to tax on capital gains into the future on that money that you've already paid tax on. Anyways, that's a story for another day. But you now have to support the government's poor control of managing money. And for them, it's not a question of, okay, do we think that this money will enable people to buy houses in the future? Or does this bootstrap the network and really create more jobs into the future? It's, we need to plug a hole that we created by handing out free money. And we see that there's a potential to collect $1 billion worth of tax. So that's how we're going to plug the hole. And I think that's as simple as it is for government. But the truth is, there's more philosophical and strategic ways to think about it. But unfortunately, it's just not in the mandate, the current mandate of the tax authorities or the government at the moment.
Yeah, I don't think governments tend to think very strategically when, you know, their governance terms are very short. So they are thinking about what they're doing this year, next year. But, you know, 20 years from now, government doesn't really care. That's my personal opinion.
I think that is backed up, if I'm not mistaken, in somewhere like China, where you'll have somebody run the country for a term of 10 or 20 years. It allows them to have a 20-year strategy and plan that out and not have to suffer all the bureaucratic nonsense that often just politics becomes. Whereas in a country where you have a 3 or 4-year term or even less, it's really, okay, how do I secure the next term? It's not looking out for the best of the 26 million people. It's looking out for the best of that one person. And it becomes a gamble as well now. So just think about COVID, for example. Somebody, whether it's the current prime minister or when he most likely gets kicked out, the next prime minister, who's going to open the borders? Because if Scott Morrison opened the borders today and the cases went to 20,000 cases a day, he will 100%. He's put the date on his tombstone, right?
Yeah.
But if it's the next prime minister, they're not going to do it either, because will they then survive their term, or will they just get shouted at in parliament every single day? So it is. It's this long term versus short term strategy, and there's honestly a lot of things wrong with the world. And I think the way politics is handled, like tech companies are doing things and changing in an agile way every single day, and laws and regulations just in general at a philosophical level are still dated back hundreds of years. And we know that laws have been created in the past that were absolutely wrong and needed to get changed. And there were laws on slavery and laws on females not being able to partake in sports events, right, and not being able to vote. And just because something is the law today doesn't mean it's right. And just because something is the way of doing something today and yesterday doesn't mean it's the way we should be doing it tomorrow. Unfortunately, you just need people to see things in a more liberal way and be able to want to deal with it differently and not just stick with the status quo.
But that's one good thing that crypto, I think, brings to the world. It's like this thing that now everybody's challenging everything and inventing new ways of, you know, managing organizations and making them decentralized and making sure that a lot of people have a voice and not just the people that, you know, are at the top. Everything is changing. And that's I think we're living really interesting times because of that, because people understand that things should not be forever and we should always challenge the status quo.
Absolutely. And I think that people from an older generation or just an individual who doesn't understand the space will say, oh, DeFi is trying to get rid of banks and DeFi is anti-capitalist and it's just a way for criminals to interact with one another. But it's really just a bunch of software developers, extremely smart people who understand what this technology can do. And they're creating a better financial system. And of course, there is horrendous user experience. And there are things that are still yet to be properly figured out. So for example, you can give a bank $1,000 and they can give you a $10,000 loan, which means that you are geared up by 10 times or 9 times. And if you do that in the DeFi space, you are normally putting in $10,000 and only getting back $5,000 loan, which is kind of counterintuitive. But things like that still need to get solved for. But they've solved for another problem, which is more of an institutional, historical problem of having one bank with all your money and controlling it, and you not having access or custody of your own funds. And naturally, people are scared of change. And somebody, and I'm not an ageist or anything, but somebody once said to me that old age or age isn't a number. It's more of whether or not you're willing to learn new things. And I think that's quite true. The second somebody becomes old is when they become grumpy and they argue about things and they don't want to see things or learn about new things. And that's when you can say, okay, that person's old. But you can always get that hip grandpa who's he's with it and he's very trendy and he's happy to talk about things that are more liberal or open-minded. And you don't see that person as old anymore. You see them as still young and fresh. So there's always the battle.
Yeah, we have the battle for balance.
Exactly.
All right. We're getting to the pointy end. I've introduced something lately called the Quick Three. So the Quick Three are, what are you currently reading? What's your favorite resource? And do you have a current favorite project that you're watching? So reading, resource, and project.
I'm very upset to say I haven't been reading a lot lately. I'm a bit out of routine, but I was actually reading The Hard Thing About Hard Things.
Okay.
Which is by Ben Horowitz, who's one of the founders of Andreessen Horowitz, A16Z, the venture capital fund. It's more of a book about actual business and how to deal with scaling company and things like that. But the next book I want to read is called Noise. I think it's Daniel Kahneman's new book, The Behavioral Economist.
Mm-hmm.
So that is what I'm reading, what I plan to read. My favorite resource, I'm sure everybody gives the answer, and it just says Twitter.
Everybody says Twitter.
Really, I do use Twitter for a lot. I think Into the Block as well. I like to use that for on-chain metrics. I think on-chain metrics are everything. It's data-based, factual information to base your investments on. But Twitter, I do like Twitter a lot. And then, what current projects am I looking at the moment? I can't think of one at the moment that is worth mentioning. I do think that there was obviously a lot of noise in the space of projects that were great and projects that were not so great. I'm waiting to see that noise just die down.
So is there, let's flip that a bit. Is there anything within, you know, the technology itself that is grabbing your attention at the moment? You're in the exchanges space.
I do think DeFi exchanges, automated market makers like Uniswap and 1inch, having an exchange without having an exchange, right? So having a DAO that runs an automated market maker, that's extremely interesting. And what's crazy is that for the person like you and I, we just connect our wallets and make a trade if we wanted to. But the technology and the maths behind that is really astounding. So what those guys are building is crazy. And I think that will start to get institutionalized as well, which I think Uniswap is busy doing quite well. So yeah, Uniswap. Uniswap's fantastic.
There you go. What? Yay! Yeah. That's it. Yeah, painless.
Painless. Maybe not for awesome. The listeners.
Oh, I'm sure they will find it fun. Thank you for your time today.
Go outside and visit
you know, one of the beautiful Romanesque places. Say hello for me.
I'll do so.
All right. Thanks, Byron.
Thank you so much for having me.
And that is the adventurous Byron Goldberg. Get in touch with Byron. If you have a question or want to say hi, hit him up on Twitter. It's his favorite tool. I've added his social links to the description for you. Between you and me now, how's your week going? The world is a crazy place to be living in right now. I just wanted to check in with you. Hope you're well. You're working on something interesting, getting exercise, talking to your friends. That's what I've been focusing on and talking about, working on interesting things. Here we are, I just wanted to reach out. My DMs are open. If you want to chat, just ping me. I'm here. Hope you enjoyed the episode today. Wherever you are, whatever you're doing, enjoy the moment. Thank you for listening. I will see you on the next block. Bye.